Welcome to the show. I'm James.
I'm Riley.
And today we are discussing The Matrix Reloaded. It's the number two. We'll laugh, we'll argue, we might get a little too into it, but at the end of the day, they're just movies.
Spoiler alert. I didn't think about what to do for that at all, because David has been doing them and he's not here because he's trapped by horrible, disastrous floods that
no
are happening.
No man is an island. Except for David.
Except for David.
He passed the torch back you to do spoiler alerts.
No, he didn't.
He did last episode. You can watch it. Anyways,
I wasn't
next week, we're doing Ghostbusters Afterlife, also known as Stranger Things,
which,
the movie.
Yeah, which will be interesting because I haven't seen a single Ghostbusters movie.
Well, you got all weekend, buddy.
So latch on to me if that's your experience.
I guess you go first, telling me this movie out of 10.
Feels weird.
We've never done a two-personer.
I know.
What are you giving this movie out of 10?
Here's my slogan.
Thank you.
Watching this movie feels a bit like answering your door to see the Wachowskis holding a Schopenhauer book, and they say, "Excuse me, sir, do you have a moment to talk about our Lord and Savior, the idea of determinism and free will?" Because I feel like that's all this movie talks about constantly, but we'll get into that. 6 out of 10 is what I'm giving it. I feel like I watched it in chunks, so this is like...
What?
I'm just saying that up front, okay?
Okay, all right.
But thank I remember... you. Being disappointed in the movie, like it was like fun, it was cool, you know, I was young, I forget how old I was, 2003.
14 or something. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that, 15. And yeah, I remember being a little disappointed by it, but while also being like, whoa, an army of CGI Smith clones?
Sick.
But yeah, this time around, I was kind of like, I liked the action sequences, the CGI, some of it does not age well. Anyways, that's what about you, James?
Well, I watched this movie a bazillion times as a teen.
Oh, really?
Thought it was so cool.
Yeah, I think this is only my third, maybe, time?
I was expecting, all right, time to watch that as an adult and realize why everybody hates it.
Right.
Here we go. But here's my slogan. The Matrix Reloaded doesn't need to exist. It does not need to exist.
That's a good point.
The Matrix was fine. But if it were to exist, this is about as good as it could have been. 8.9 out of 10. I loved it. I loved it again, guys.
I'm not ready for this. James,
8.9?
8.9?
I like it more than the new Bond. And I gave that like an 8.5 or 7 or something high. 8.5, 8.75. Dude, I loved it. I watched it again. And the point where I was like, oh, now it sucks, never came.
Really?
Never came. I was like, the first like half hour happened, I was like, that was a tight opening.
Not even in the architect part?
No, I know what all the big words mean now. I could follow the architect part, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Oh, my gosh.
I admit that as a child, I never knew actually what happened there. never got it.
I feel like the number one thing I took from that as a kid was like, apropos, vis-a-vis,
ergo.
Accordingly.
Do you remember the MTV Music Awards?
I think that's
parody?
Maybe why. Yeah,
I watched that a million times with my friends. So funny.
I think that's actually. I feel like I just quoted it verbatim, like the things that he says. Is Will Ferrell is the architect?
I invented the Matrix and several popular video games. It's so funny. Oh, everyone should watch that.
Man, we definitely should get deeper into that.
Right after this message from our sponsors. They're just movies supported by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels, including their fourth-generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. Its new wireless charging system removes the need to bring cables with you, and it's compatible with most Qi charging pads. The Lawnmower 4.0 includes ceramic blades with skin-safe tech, reducing nicks and cuts. It's cordless, it's waterproof, and it gets 90 minutes of use on a full charge. So head to manscaped.com/carpool20 and get 20% off and free shipping today. We're also brought to you by Private Internet Access, VPIAN. It's a VPN. They help you hide your true IP address so that you can bypass your restrictions and censorship. You have control. You can connect up to 10 devices at once, and it includes an internet kill switch.
Me.
Me too. If your VPN gets disconnected involuntarily, PIA is available for Windows, Mac, Android, iOS, and even as the... goddamn Chrome extension. You know, sometimes I add something in there. I couldn't think of anything. Check it out at lmg.gg/carpoolcritics, which we're not called anymore. Cereal is great and all, but have you seen this stuff?
Oh, yes, I have.
I'm holding cereal.
Sounds delicious.
It's from Magic Spoon. Grab that out of the box, too.
Okay.
Magic Spoon is changing the fact that cereal is so crappy and sugar full with... it's basically keto cereal. They have some that looks like Fruit Loops, and I give it to my kid, and she thinks she's getting a treat, but turns out there's no sugar.
Really? Did she like it?
It's amazing.
Oh, nice.
It's such a life hack. It's awesome. 14 grams of protein, only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving, and 140 calories, 0 grams of sugar. It's keto-friendly, it's gluten-free, it's grain-free, it's soy-free, it's low-carb. Check out their best-selling flavors in a variety pack, including cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter.
Actually blows my mind.
Magic Spoon is having their best offer yet for Black Friday right now. So if you click the link below, you can get 20% off your order. You can build your very own 4-pack, and you can use Carpool BF for 20% off for a limited time.
Need to change these.
Carpool BF.
Carpool boyfriend?
You know it.
Be our boyfriend.
Yeah, 100% happiness guarantee. If you don't like it, they'll refund you. No questions asked. Sweet. Get that cereal off the table. Let's get into the Matrix. Is that cereal a simulation? No. It's just low carb. so little sugar, you'll think it's not real.
If the experience you have is great,
what does it matter?
Is it real? It's still real cereal.
Cypher's
even
like,
though there's no sugar in it.
Cypher's talking to Smith. I want to remember nothing as he's eating his Magic Spoon cereal.
Honestly, it's so funny. Lauren, my wife, said to me as I was, I think I finished the movie and then I was talking to her about it, and she was just like, "Wait, why are people trying to get? Why do people want to leave the Matrix again?" And I'm like, well, because you're slave to the machine. It's like, yeah, but you don't know that. You're having a good time. It's just regular life.
Maybe not. You might not have a good time.
And I was like, well, because, and she like, you know, it was at a point in the movie where they're like in the ship and they're wearing their dirty, grimy clothes and everything's gray and sad and nasty. And she's like, why do people want to live there? Why wouldn't they want to live in the? I'm like, that's a good point.
Because they live in Edmonton in the Matrix.
Yeah, look, depending on where you live.
This is addressed in the movie.
Right. Yeah, could you remind me? Because I started to give an argument back, and I was like, there's something there, but...
Yeah, well, the architect says that it's... Are we going to do the synopsis?
Okay.
When you were like, can you remind me? I thought this was the synopsis segment.
Yeah. Here's the synopsis. 6 months after the events of The Matrix, Neo is haunted by visions of Trinity's death while Zion prepares for an impending machine attack. Agent Smith is, somehow, still alive and able to clone himself by assimilating humans and programs, allowing him to enter the real world in the body of a human named Bane. In Zion, Morpheus tells everyone not to be afraid of the machine attack because the prophecy, etc., then everyone has a dance orgy. The next day, Neo meets the Oracle in The Matrix, who tells him that to fulfill the prophecy, he must reach the Source. But to do that, he must find the Keymaker, who is being held prisoner by a powerful program called the Merovingian.
See?
After she leaves, the Oracle, Smith arrives, thanking Neo for freeing him from the system, but then attacks with an army of clones. Neo is nearly overwhelmed, but flies away. Neo, Trinity, and Morpheus meet the Merovingian, who refuses to free the Keymaker, but his wife, Persephone, does, in exchange for a kiss from Neo.
Oh, Persephone!
Nice. After battling the Merovingian's guards, the ghostly twins, and pursuing agents, our heroes escape with the Keymaker and make plans to reach the Source. Two other ship's crews are recruited to disable the Source defense systems, but when one ship is destroyed, Trinity enters the Matrix to complete their objective, despite Neo's request for her to stay behind. She succeeds, but is intercepted by an agent. Meanwhile, Neo battles another army of Smiths, who shoot the Keymaker right after he opens the Source door. Inside the Source, Neo meets the architect of the Matrix, who reveals that Neo is the sixth iteration of the One, and the prophecy is another lie by the machines to control humans. The architect tells Neo he can return to the Source and select individuals to repopulate Zion after its imminent destruction.
Two guys to every girl.
Mm.
Oh, wait, what?
More than that.
The opposite.
What? Oh, yeah, that's right. It's like, yeah, sounds good. Or Neo can rescue Trinity, breaking the cycle and dooming all of humanity. Neo reaches Trinity just after she's shot by an agent, but he removes the bullet and restarts her heart. Back in the real world, Morpheus is stunned by Neo's revelations and questions everything he believed. Sentinels approach and destroy their ship, but Neo then somehow disables them with his mind before fainting. They're rescued by another ship, where Neo is laid on a medical bed right next to an unconscious Bane.
I was raised in the Matrix.
Myth was?
His name is Bane. I don't know.
I'm sorry. I didn't make a pun at all.
How about that not ending? Even... That music at the end where the camera's panning over the hospital, but he's lying on the stretcher, and then it shows Bane's the only other survivor, and the music is just like so shrill and...
I don't even remember.
Oh, and then it like ends on this like kind of note. And then it hits the credits.
And then,
they do one beat. It's like, one beat. Come on! Yeah. And then you,
It is a good. It is a good ending.
It makes you stand up from the theater seat just like, ready for the third one.
It's funny. I feel like maybe I was just like, oh, it's going to be Bane. And then I saw Bane. Like when Rage comes in, I was like, yeah, okay. I almost like, okay, you know what? I might upgrade my score.
Oh, you're going to, I'm going to convince you at the end of this.
I originally gave it a 7, and then I started writing my notes, and then I was kind of like, it's a 6.
Let me tell you something.
But like my initial emotional reaction was, yeah, it was pretty good.
Let me tell you something, pal.
8.9 though, James?
I'm waiting for the third one to bring me back to Earth because...
Revolutions.
Here's what I wonder. I know for a fact there are people who watched the second one and were pissed off immediately. Like, they didn't like it. A lot of people do not like this movie. I'm not saying that everybody is wrong and that they look back and the third one is the one that sucks and they group all the sequels together as sucking.
Yeah.
I think that's at play for some, but I acknowledge that some people actually just don't like the second one. I think when we watch the third one, it's going to be like, yeah, this one sucks.
Do we have to acknowledge all the good stuff before we get into the nitty gritty here? Because it's like, this is an old movie, and the main thing about it is that it's kind of hated.
I know, it's very...
Is it hated? What does it have right now?
Dude, I am like risking my career. My reputation as a movie critic.
8.9 is really high for this, James. That's like near perfect.
I really like this movie. No, it's not even into the nines.
But 8.9, that's one decimal down from... Or are you saying that like you really want to say that it's almost a perfect movie, but you know that that's not...
It's not a perfect movie.
It's untenable?
It's not a perfect movie. Like, because the thing is, the first one is better.
It's got 73% on Rotten Tomatoes, 62% on Metacritic.
But what is IMDb?
7.2.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
Most people... I think the reputation's worse than it deserves.
I
think it's overhated.
I feel like it might be that The Matrix, the first one, was so mind-blowing and crazy that this one comes out and it was like, it's just an okay, fun action movie,
basically.
Well,
it's a different tone, and it's less mind-blowing.
88%.
But this is what I was trying to say.
No, it's not even that. 8.7 on IMDb, 88 on Rotten Tomatoes. That's the first one.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, the first one is just... It's more accessible. I think it's just cooler. And like I said, it's standalone. We didn't need this movie. But since they made this movie, there are certain things you needed to do to reinvent it, to expand the universe, to make it, give it a reason to exist. And I think they did all those things to the best of their ability.
Yeah.
And this is coming from someone who, by the way, I do not want to see the fourth one. When I heard the fourth one was announced, I was like, no.
Wait, really?
It's going to suck so bad. But now that I watch this again, maybe it won't.
Maybe
I'm excited.
I feel like I'm tracking with you on like we didn't need the sequels thing. I think it definitely wouldn't have the same legacy in terms of like branching out into other media and stuff. Like there's been video games, the Animatrix and stuff, and like other things. I don't know if there's books. I feel like there are novels maybe in the universe.
Some comics, I think.
But it could have been a self-contained story. But now having branched out into like. The broader world, we think that Neo and Morpheus and them have kind of like escaped the system to a certain degree when they leave the Matrix, and he can like see the code and stuff. But really, we learn in this one, that's all part of another system of control. You're still in the box; you haven't broken out of it. And so now that we've established that, I'm kind of like, all right, I can see them continuing to make content within this universe. Like we know that the Matrix reboots, you know, so it's like Matrix 4. It seems kind of weird to have all that apocalyptic stuff in Matrix 3, which we'll talk about next week or a
couple weeks
whenever we do it. And then to like kind of reset and we're like, we're back in the Matrix. But
I have no idea.
It sort of makes sense.
I'm not ready to speculate on a 4. I have to watch 3 first.
You watched half the trailer though.
And one time I was sitting in Dune and they're playing the trailer and I'm like, close my eyes.
Yeah, I
like,
guess I shouldn't spoil it for like people. I mean, that's not really a huge spoiler for people who haven't seen the trailer.
You didn't really spoil much, but I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about this movie and how awesome it is. And
yeah, what's awesome? What do you love? What makes this movie like surpass your expectations or like surpass the negative criticism for you?
I think it just has it has lots of good character arts that are like super. There's just like a lot of unity. I think the pace is really good. The script is really tight. Like I wrote down.
You think the pace is
good? Oh, the pace is good. The pace is good, buddy. And it expands the lore in every way. Like the movie opens.
I like the lore expanding.
With like a flash forward, right? We see Trinity fighting and then she falls. And then Neo wakes up and we're in the real world again.
Right.
Then we, what do we find out there? Is that when we find out that the, oh, they're going back to Zion. We get to go to Zion.
That's, yeah, we've never been to Zion before.
Oh, it's so dope at Zion because.
That was a cool reveal.
They go, the ship
Although
like approaches.
I'm wondering how they manufacture things.
I know. I know, but I like the design that they did with, like, I like how they wear these shabby clothes that are like, presumably made with like the shittiest moss that they don't have a lot of. So everyone just has to wear the same little smock for seven years.
Oh, that makes sense.
There's no sunlight.
Wait, is that real? Is that like lore that you know?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm just assuming.
Because it's like, where do they get fabric?
Exactly.
They don't have animals.
It's probably just like grubby little drubby things.
They have plants and stuff. I guess they farm because they...
Do they have UVB lights?
We're really getting into
right away. No, but what the thing I think is cool is like we know...
Where do they get seeds to build? Oh, they get... They don't know where they got it because the machines gave it to them.
Oh, I don't know.
All right, continue.
We know that they have these constructs from the first movie when they're training how to fight and everything, just on disc, right? You're like,
right.
Oh, I know Kung Fu now.
Yeah.
But we get to see those like actually applied when the ship is approaching Zion and you see there's people who are jacked in, not to the Matrix, but to constructs, and they have those people who are operating the gates of Zion. They're like floating and they're like using those touch screens. That's so sweet.
I was taken aback at that moment for a second because I was like, wait. From what I understand, from what I remember of these movies, like Zion is like dirty and gritty and like their technology looks like kind of like steampunky, even though it's not. It's like, it just looks like they haggled it together with a bunch of things, you know?
Haggled it. Cobbled,
that's what I'm thinking of. And then all of a sudden we have these like super pristine, minimalistic, like
holographic. Yeah, they're jacked
in. Oh, that's in the Matrix.
It's not the Matrix, that's controlled by machines, but they are, it shows like that woman who's operating the gate that's talking to them, like, what'd she say? Gates open,
I totally
beds made.
Missed that.
It shows her in a
They're in a construct.
Chair. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't even catch that. That's so funny.
Come on, man.
That's cool.
Yeah. And then
I didn't like recognize the characters. Like it shows people jacked in and then it cuts to them being in a construct, I guess, but I didn't make the connection that those are the same people, I guess.
I love the lore expansion. Like, let's just talk about that for
great,
a second. Like,
for sure.
All the things you get teased in the first one, you get in this movie.
Yeah.
So if you think that's lame and it's like too sci-fi for you and you liked the level the first one was at,
yep.
I think those are the people who are just like, ew, on this one.
Right.
But if you're willing, if you're interested and you want to see that, then they did it awesomely because we've heard about Zion. Remember a tank tapping on the floor of the Nebuchadnezzar being like, oh, down the planet's core, where it's still warm, that's Zion. You're like, yeah, now we get to see it.
Yeah, how deep are they supposed to be?
Down there. Well, we know that we know that the machines dug 2,000 kilometers or 2,000 meters in like a few hours.
Anyways, it's crazily deep.
They're
no
down
one,
there.
No one goes to the surface.
We get to see Zion, is what
right.
I'm saying. We get to see, in the first
the point
one,
is Zion.
We have all this mythos around Trinity being like a badass hacker. Remember that line?
Right.
Like, always thought you were a dude. Most guys do. We never see her hack in the first one. We see her hack in this movie.
Wait, what does she hack?
At the end, she has to like she hacks in to get the power turned off of that floor.
Oh,
see,
yeah,
like,
I always
on.
Thought
she's
I
typing.
Always thought that like she was just a badass hacker because they have access to kind of like seeing the code of the Matrix and stuff, and they can like spawn in things and whatnot. You know?
Well,
I didn't make the connection that was like a core characteristic of Trinity in the first one. But anyways, continue.
We get to see, in the first one we see her on a motorcycle. Remember when Thomas Anderson's mouth closes shut and then he gets like brought away.
Thomas Anderson.
He's like, Neo's being like carted off into cuffs.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then she's looking at him through her rearview mirror of her motorcycle, right? And then she drives off on her bike. But in the first one.
Yeah.
But there's no car chases in the first one. In this movie, there's a big car chase and we get to see her ripping around on a motorcycle. It's like,
oh,
fuck yeah.
There's no car chases.
We just get delivery in this movie of everything we wanted.
There's a lot of like really cool set pieces as well.
Oh, that 15-minute car chase? So
yeah,
and it's so expertly done.
But here's the thing about that. Well, okay, we'll get to that. It's a cool car chase for sure. It's just like when I see that, I'm kind of like, all right, this is an excuse to have a lot of cool set pieces and action and stuff. And it definitely delivers on that count. Like we get some cool fights between Morpheus and the agent. Cool explosions man, that scene, I think I mentioned it last week when we were talking about this, but like when Morpheus like stops the twins in their SUV with a samurai sword, he like flipped, he
side rolls,
yeah,
pulls the sword, the katana out, like slides along the length of it, and then
slashes their car,
it rolls,
they turn,
he shoots,
yeah,
explosion,
bye-bye twins.
That was awesome.
Are they dead?
He's got a trench coat. they're ghosts.
They all have trench coats. Everyone has a trench coat.
I know. It's hilarious. I was thinking about that in the meeting this is the thing that probably ages the least well in these movies is the style that they went with. Like, you know, like everyone's wearing alligator skin boots and these stupid glasses.
I know. I had a moment where it was the meeting where all the ship's captains are meeting.
Right at the beginning.
Yeah. And they show all these people and they're all wearing this like variation on a theme. They're all wearing like leather trench coat.
If this movie was made today, it would be the opposite. It would be super diverse. There'd be like a punk one. And there would be like a K-pop one.
Yeah, why are they like all wearing... Is that just what was cool?
That's what the Wachowskis thought was cool. That's what the Wachowskis thought was cool. So that's just what they wanted to do.
This is the funniest aspect of the Matrix movies to me is like, in 2000, whatever, you're like, well, those guys look like badasses. Or maybe you don't even like think ahead of time that that's what a badass looks like, but then you see these movies and it works so well with like the whole vibe and the aesthetic and you're like, okay, leather trench coats and armless sunglasses are cool.
I think it was cool in 99.
And the phones with the sliding out bit.
Yeah.
This is what's cool. And now we look back and we're like, that looks cringe as hell.
Honestly,
looks like if my child decided to step out of the house wearing
with a Trinity haircut, no thanks. Less gel, Trin.
Yeah.
I think that it looked bad when these movies came out. I think it was all right.
Did it? Well, that's what I don't know.
It was borderline. It's kind of like,
we should ask someone who was an adult at that time.
Yeah. And I think it's actually to the detriment of some of the performances when, especially like Jada Pinkett Smith, you can't see their eyes through the sunglasses and it makes it kind of cornier. And I want to see them emote more. They're good actors in this movie.
Yeah, there are definitely points where characters are wearing sunglasses. I think the point that it made me think of it was when Smith shows up to Neo's Oracle meeting and then Neo and Smith are talking, but they're both wearing sunglasses. Neo puts on his sunglasses when Smith arrives and then they're both kind of talking to each other and you can't see their eyes. But like, it's sort of an emotional moment because this is their reunion. Neo hasn't seen Smith before this. And Smith is like, you freed me from the system. I want to thank you, Mr. Anderson, blah, 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 blah. But like, I can't see his eyes. And it's just like annoying. I want to see, something. Yeah. But they're stoic, cool characters. So we have to have the sunglasses on.
You know what else gets expanded is the relationships. Like Morpheus in the first one, like you only have the crew of the Nebuchadnezzar in the first one.
Yes.
And so everybody believes in what Morpheus believes, except Cypher.
Right.
He's like that red pill, blue pill bullshit.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But in this movie, Morpheus' whole thing is his struggle with credibility.
Mm.
And
we go back to Zion, and we're thinking like, yeah, all of Zion is behind this prophecy idea and the one in Neo. And we do see some of that because like they come out and they're kind of like treating Neo like Jesus or whatever.
But for Morpheus, actually, you get the opposite for the first part of the movie. You mostly get people saying... This guy's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I think he has an interaction with Locke who's saying like, dude, you're nuts. I need your ship. Like this is, we live in the real world here, literally.
Yeah, but also as you're saying in that meeting with all the captains, people are like, I don't know, Morpheus, like blah blah blah, and he's like trying to convince them of stuff.
Yeah.
And he's the one that has faith and he's like, come on, like I believe even though I don't really have any reason to, and they're like, we can't like get on board with you on that, but he's just like, please.
And the guy who finally says he's going to help him goes, shit, Morpheus, I'll help you out just to see what Deadbolt does to you.
Right, right.
Like, not even because I really believe, but just like, what, I'll throw you a bone. It's not.
He's like got a reputation for being kind of like crazy, but at the same time, he's like a badass.
He's so compelling.
Yeah, yeah.
Such a good speaker.
Yeah, he's a leader figure.
That sounds exactly like the thinking of a machine to me. I'm like, man, this guy.
I believe this night holds.
You
for
don't,
many of us,
you
the
don't
very
need
meaning
to be
of our
a,
lives.
You don't need to be a high energy, loud, gregarious person to command a room.
Yeah.
In fact, slowing down, I think, really draws people in.
Lawrence Fishburne, man.
That guy's a hell of an actor. But it's not until you get to the big monologue he does in the cave that you actually see he has followers because
machine.
That was the funniest part of the MTV parody.
Yeah.
It's like Andy Dick is in the crowd and he's like, apparently there's going to be a big orgy tonight. Like, Morpheus, what can we expect at this orgy?
At this
machines.
Orgy.
Oh.
Honestly, now I'm like, I'm convinced that most of the things I remember from this movie are from the MTV parody.
Yeah, but what I was saying was it's not until that scene where he approaches the podium. There's no podium. He approaches the precipice from which he speaks.
They don't have microphones for some reason, even though they have all this other technology.
Everybody is clamoring. Everybody's clapping. He has followers.
Everyone showed up in their sexiest rags.
And they love him. That's the moment where you're like, whoa, okay, he has a following.
Yeah, 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 for sure. I think, we see the people, like, I think that's why Locke, Well, that's what's funny, too. The council seems to be largely on his side. It seems like most of Zion is like, yeah, Morpheus and Neo, the one prophecy, yeah, we're all for it. And there's like a few detractors. Like Locke is like, no, we have to defend the city and blah, 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 blah. But everyone else is like,
it'll work. Don't worry.
I don't know. I think...
Well, because the whole council is like,
not the whole,
screw you,
the people
Locke.
Who speak on the council. Well, we only see like two of them.
Okay, sure.
There's
Questlove
dude.
But obviously there's enough...
Hippie chick.
Obviously most of the people are behind him, and there's enough people on the council to kind of make decisions in Morpheus's favor. So...
There's enough.
Yeah. But it's interesting, as you were saying, to kind of see this, like, you know, at the end of the movie, we discover that the prophecy... is sort of bunk, although there's still movie 3, and maybe he's like the one of ones or whatever. I don't know. I forget. Honestly, forget what happens.
I totally forget. I never understood movie 3.
At the very least, we understand that Morpheus is like, you know, there's reason for him. There's reasons maybe that he's ignoring to like hold on, take a step back, and like question things for a second instead of just like going on blind faith.
You know what's tight is one of the first scenes after the flashback or the dream sequence scene. It's Morpheus and
Wait,
Link.
Which one?
The Trinity Falling is like oh,
okay,
is
yeah,
the
yeah.
opening.
Yeah.
But then the actual real first scene is Link and Morpheus. And it's Link being like, are you sure we should fly over there? There's a lot of Sentinel activity. And then Morpheus pulls over and goes, dude, I need you to trust me.
Yeah.
And that it sets up his entire arc. His whole struggle of credibility
but
is
Link,
set up right there.
Link feels like he gets on board right away. Like as soon as they get back to Zion and he's like, he tells his girlfriend or whoever that he's like, I don't know, I'm starting to believe it. But it's like, there's no point at which he's like, all right, you could say that maybe the point where he like takes her luck charm and puts it on or something, maybe that's supposed to represent something, but like his arc is like completed.
I'm not talking about Link's arc. I'm talking about setting up the whole
Morpheus
is. And setting the stage of like, not everybody like fully is on board with him.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just do that like in scene one.
And then he's not on board by the end.
You Morpheus?
Well, he has that... It's a great moment.
No, nobody's on board. The ship blows up.
Hey, got him.
How about the Link, though?
Yeah? What about him?
They got rid of one of the best characters ever, Tank.
Tank, yeah.
He didn't even die in the first one.
Very lovable.
They just like didn't hire him again because he wanted to get more money or something like that.
Wait, what do you mean? He died?
He didn't die.
What are you talking about?
Dozer dies. Tank gets shot. So does Dozer. And then Tank isn't dead, grabs the gun, and kills Cypher, saving the day.
Tank doesn't die in the first one. What happened to him?
He just gets wounded.
They just kind of they. What happened?
They. I guess he succumbs to his wounds between movies.
Because now that I'm thinking about it, it seemed like he was fine. It seemed like he would survive.
Yeah, I think that there was just casting problems, which is why he's not in this movie. But the point is the way they handled it. And the way they handled it was by bringing in another character, Link, to totally just a replacement character. Who actually is awesome. I don't know about you, but I like Link.
I like Link.
I love him.
Who's that actor?
I don't know.
Or did you just say who? Do you?
No, I don't know his name. But you know, they. What I love is not only is it a good casting choice, which is not true of the Oracle's replacement in the third movie. That lady's bonk. But
okay, I was confused because I thought you said like, oh, they replaced the Oracle. But then I was like, I thought I saw clips from both movies. And I was like, that's the same. I think that isn't that the same person? Like Matrix 1 and 2, same Oracle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2 and 3, different
okay.
Oracle.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. But anyways, Link is a straight up replacement, but they did it so well because they didn't just say, oh yeah, we got a new guy. They tied it into Tank and Dozer because Link is the partner of Tank and Dozer's sister.
Mm.
And he's fulfilling a promise that he promised to Tank, I guess, when he died, that he would go and take over being the operator of the Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah,
and then that has that tension with his wife. Like, that was just so expertly executed.
It is a nice, like, it's more like world building. I feel like they do a ton of world building in this. And so that's kind of just, like, giving us a window into, like, the life of families in Zion. And, like, they obviously, like, ships, crews are going out and you don't know whether they're going to come back. It's super dangerous out there. So I like kind of getting a window into that world.
Yeah, they could have just made that. It could have been so much worse. You know, it could have been like, who's the new guy? Oh, that's Spike. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now that you've said that, though, I'm like irritated that they didn't bring Tank back because I love Tank. Who didn't?
I know.
His name's Harold Perrineau.
We talked about him in the first Matrix episode, how much we love this guy.
Did we?
Yeah, infectious smile. Very charismatic. Very friendly looking guy.
Yeah, seems strange. I want to look more into why they did that. But Yeah, the other thing, I think you kind of mentioned it, but like I loved seeing like the other ship's crews. I love, like, because we only see the Nebuchadnezzar in them, but I love kind of like that expansion of the universe where and the ships kind of look different sometimes too. Like, they don't all have the
very
same
Star Wars-y here. Yeah. I think I'm channeling the same thing you have for Star Wars, where like when I was a teen, I like had to know all their names, all their captains' names.
Yeah, and it's funny because on the rewatch here, I was like, oh, Niobe, like Jada Pinkett Smith is in here. Not Niobe? Niobe?
Yeah.
It else feels weird.
I thought you were
Niobe.
Just going casual with
I
her.
Like Niobe.
Good old Niobe.
Niobe.
Nope.
He is silent. I remember she was a big part of my experience there, but I'm realizing now that it's like she's a very minor character in the story. She's like Morpheus's love interest who also helps. But
she's the main character of the video game. Maybe that's...
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's why I realized that's why, because I played Enter the Matrix and it was like super cool to play that game because you're like, I can actually... Like
bullet time.
Any game with like force powers or the equivalent, I love it.
It was a great game.
Super cool. You can like slow down time and like force jump.
Let's go back to the caves.
All right.
Best monologue ever.
Nipples.
That's a hell of a speech.
Nipples is what I remember from the caves. I don't want to talk about the speech. I just want to talk about the nipples.
Remember in the MTV Movie Awards parody, that you know that guy jumps in the air and like a sweat like flows off of him?
Yeah.
And then they get splashed. They go, yuck.
Oh, why didn't I like that came up as a recommended thing on YouTube because of like the almighty algorithm, but like I didn't click on it. I should have watched
it. That's so funny.
Fool.
I was okay, so before we get to that though, the monologue.
Okay. All right.
How good is that monologue though?
Yeah.
You don't think it's a great monologue? I remember that whole thing.
It is good. It is good, but I feel like you come in with like a lot of fandom. I think I came in with the sort of like Star Wars prequel attitude where like I know that it's a bad movie, but I'm down to like enjoy, you know, some of the fun stuff, like the action sequences and like the cool, like badass moments or whatever. But I wasn't like, yeah, tell me to keep believing Morpheus.
I don't know.
That's like on a thematic level that I wasn't ready to appreciate.
I walked in being like, all right, show me why you're bad. Now that I...
Oh, yeah.
But I was also enhanced.
Mm.
So I don't know.
Like, I'll follow you, Morpheus. Get out of your couch, try to get in the
Andy
TV.
Dick, we love you, Morpheus. I thought it was a really sweet monologue. But then my next note that I wrote down right after that is, here it is verbatim. What compels a filmmaker to include such a party montage?
It's so like, long. It's like 2.5 minutes.
Slow motion, grinding.
I actually timed it because I'm like, all right, when is this starting? All right, let's go.
How long is it?
It's 2.5 minutes.
That's it?
Yeah, it feels longer probably.
Felt like an eternity to me.
But like 2.5 minutes of just slow motion, dance music, people gyrating.
It's well done.
Neo and Trinity doing it. It's like, yeah, I mean, I was excited as a teen in the theater. It got me going.
The Wachowskis have good taste in music.
Sort of.
Well, I mean, it fits the vibe.
Yeah. It definitely, I felt like I was there. I feel like I could feel people's juices on me.
The Wachowskis are into sex stuff.
Yep.
You know?
Oh, big time.
They're into
I don't know what I'm talking about. I have no idea.
I don't know what that means, but you know what I mean?
Well, if this movie is anything to go on.
Yeah, what we're given from the first couple of movies.
Yeah.
They're sex positive people. Oh, and if you think of Sense8. There's just lots
Big
of
time.
Sex themes in their movies.
Yeah. For some reason, Neo and Carrie Ann Moss, Lauren was saying that she's like, oh, they are hot together. But they never did it for me. I was kind of like, they're both kind of boring looking.
They're hot together in the real world. I hate Trinity in The Matrix. When Trinity's in The Matrix, her posture's just too on and her hair is, I hate her hair.
Yeah, I'm not like sexually
she's
attracted.
She's so stoic in The Matrix.
Yeah.
But she seems like super real
and not
cool
to say that like
world.
A stoic... powerful woman can't be sexy. Carrie Ann Moss is just not, I don't know, she's not my cup of tea. So then like
I
they're
think she's
doing
hot.
It. What?
I think she's hot.
Yeah, I don't know.
I just don't
right.
like all the dippity do in The Matrix. And it like comes
maybe that's
it's
it.
Like slick to
it's
her
like,
head
yeah.
and then it comes out on
it's
the
it's like all the leather and the dippity do and the things are wet and weird.
I don't even mind the leather.
I don't know.
When
it's
she
not my
kicks
thing.
And her heel comes like right up to her shoulders.
Scorpion kick?
Dude, yeah, that
Watch
Scorpion
out.
Kick was huge. She's smashing me with a bike helmet. She kicks ass.
Scorpion kick was huge.
I met her auntie one time. Did I tell you that? I might have said that in the first episode.
You didn't tell? Maybe. I don't remember.
I worked in a movie theater, and her auntie came to watch the zombie movie she was in.
Mm. One thing that I notice now, and I feel like I didn't even notice when the movie came out was that the cast is so diverse. Maybe not like the main kind cast. Of. Obviously, Neo and Trinity.
Zion is diverse as fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is a realistic portrayal of the future to me.
Right. And I think that's like seeing it now, and especially, you know, after the past few years of like people making a big freaking deal about there being like a black stormtrooper, or like it seems like relations have sort of regressed in that way when there are like main characters or like even a lot of representation for characters of color, there's like a backlash on Twitter and Reddit and stuff. There's like a contingent of the internet that doesn't want to see that and they think that it's like pandering and virtue signaling. But seeing this movie, I'm like, I don't remember that being a topic of discussion at all.
It reminds me of the points that people, you sometimes hear in today's climate where people go, we solved this in the 90s. We were past this.
It's true. I mean, I definitely have that feeling sometimes where it's like, there was definitely less talking about it, but maybe you could argue that that's part of the problem too. Anyways, the point being, we don't want to get too deep
into that. I don't know if anyone
now.
Claims it was solved, but it definitely was like, it was
representation.
Heading
was,
in the right direction. It was
right.
Fine.
Anyways, super diverse, and it was cool to see that. Especially because it's like, I mean, it sort of makes sense because it's like they're not being discriminatory in like the races that they pull out of the Matrix. It's just like, yeah, a certain percentage of humanity, and most of humanity is not white. So it was good to see. Smith! Let's go into the deeper things. Because I want to say something that I don't
Smith
like now.
Smith kind of gets there, though.
Sort of.
What don't you like, Riley?
So like, one... I kind of got to it in my slogan. The main criticism that I have in this movie is the fact that, like, it's good for a movie to have a theme, but this movie is like, the entire movie is like made up of many different conversations about determinism and free will.
Yeah.
It's like choice, Oracle. The Oracle conversation is mainly talking about how all the choices are already made. You just have to understand why.
And that's cryptic as F, isn't it?
It is.
I'm like, what does that mean?
It's also like, why do we have to understand the why, though?
You have to.
Because is that going
to
change something? No, it's not, because all the choices are made.
You're here to understand why you made the choice. I was like, I'm still not clear on what exactly that means.
Yeah.
And it's the perfect like device to dangle for an audience.
Yeah, and I think
like,
that...
What?
I think that they... Obviously, the Matrix sequel has to do something to kind of like make you think and maybe like make you think that your mind is being blown, because obviously the first one is sort of like, you know, hey, this reality that you know is not real. It exists, you know, there's a real world out there and you have to break out of this box, prison that you're in,
and
free your mind.
When the camera zooms out and he's in that like egg pod and like a city of egg pods, your mind
moment.
Is blown.
Totally.
They don't have a similar mind-blowing moment in this.
Well, they sort of do, but unfortunately the mind-blowing moment in the first one that was like, we're breaking out of the box, the mind-blowing moment in this one is that, oh, just kidding, we're still in the box, and that's a twist, because we thought we were out.
Yeah.
And just kidding, we're
but
back
the,
in.
I think the journey to get there is interesting, because one difference between this movie and the last one is that the Matrix itself is heterogeneous. The Matrix itself, it isn't...
Heterogeneous?
You're a genius.
Thank you.
The it's not just like this system is totally uniform in its desire to like squash humanity. Instead, we learn that there are these rogue programs. They do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. Some programs are doing this and some are doing that. Like
the Matrix is more of a platform than it is like, it is a tool, but it's also just kind of like a place that multiple parties are using to their own ends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not only does it make the movie cool to watch, because it's not more the same in terms of, yeah, they go in the Matrix and there's agents there.
Right.
There are, but there's also ghosts and vampires, and now Agent Smith is wacky, so there's like all these different, it's like there's different factions.
Wacky Mr. Smith.
So that's super cool, but
I want a spinoff called Wacky Mr. Smith, where he like has his own little adventures like the guy from Up.
Yeah.
Like there's the
like
old
a
man.
Little theme song, and like his head appears in a little circle. It's inevitable.
Ba-na-na-na,
but anyway, it's cool too, because playing into what you're saying about determinism is, well, what does it all mean when these programs think, like, do they have free will?
That's a whole aspect of the lore that's very confusing. Because, like, okay, in your mind, now I feel like I understand watching this movie, but before this rewatch, what was your understanding about how the programs experience reality or what the nature of a program is.
Well, I told you I didn't really know anything. The talkie parts in the movie when I was a teenager, I don't really know what's going on.
Talkie.
But
I feel like that's like now, one of the main parts I paid attention to.
It's really interesting because you have like the Merovingian. He talks about purpose. We all have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense for a machine.
Right.
Because they're all literally written for a purpose.
Yeah.
But then these exiled machines and programs, they didn't do what they're supposed to do.
Right. And so they've rejected their purpose. And what are they living for now?
I don't know.
Just pleasure.
It's bizarre because they also, but especially the Merovingian and his wife Persephone, they show these like human characteristics. They have a fight over jealousy.
Yeah. Which seems so strange to me. I was like, wait, what? Your programs. But this is.
But
so this
maybe
is
that's
how
why it's like the best thing you can do, the only way to live, the thing that would give a program like that pleasure would be to not be a program.
Right. So I think this is how you make sense of it. Programs that have, because there are like invisible programs that like control the weather and the birds and stuff. And Oracle indicates that the programs that were like, we don't want to do this anymore. We don't want to be like invisible in the background. They kind of like took on human form and
well,
now
I
are
don't
like,
know.
They're living as humans live. They have like abilities. So like the key maker, you can like make portals and stuff. And the Oracle still has access to like the information that she has.
Well, I want to pause you.
But it appears that they're indicating that these programs have human experiences in the Matrix. So like Persephone wants a kiss. Why would a program with no biological reality to her want a kiss? Because
and how would the Merovingian know the significance of giving this a woman in the Matrix an orgasm with
right.
a piece of cake?
Right. It's because they are embodied in like a simulated human body in the Matrix and they're feeling what humans feel.
Yeah, so that's really interesting because I don't think that they...
And that's why you can like kill them and stuff because that isn't just like...
But what does that do? Like, when the Keymaker gets shot, is he dead? Or can he just, like, occupy another body just like the agents can occupy other bodies in the first one?
Well, that's a good question. I feel like
I don't think that their embodiment is germane to the whole concept of, like, if you're an exiled program, that means you're embodied. I don't think that's necessarily it. I think they can still, like, move around in a disembodied information space.
No, I don't think they can.
Really?
No. I mean, like, obviously the ghost...
I don't think that's stated.
I think the ghost... Well, but this is what's why it's confusing is because this isn't stated. We're just talking about, like, lore, but, like, that's what I love. Sorry, guys. Obviously the ghosts have the twins, I mean, have this like ability to phase in and out of stuff, but like not everyone can do what the Keymaker does, you know, that not everyone can just like portal to somewhere else. Not everyone can.
Well, they're different programs, you know,
yeah,
TikTok
right.
can't
right.
be Snapchat,
but like the Merovingian, he's not like, he doesn't seem to have a very like a special ability that like grants him power over and above a regular human. You know,
no, like, well, he says he's like a trafficker of information. So he's more like networking equipment versus like
he's a router.
Yeah.
Or a router OS.
The ghosts, like the twins, they actually were ghosts and there's like a vampire or werewolf.
Maybe they
in
were
there.
Like, maybe they were like Windows Defender. Like
they could have been agents.
Antivirus.
They could have been agents in the past.
Or something, yeah. I feel like, so as far as the lore goes, it seems like they say this. Somebody says this. Maybe Oracle says this. Programs that are no longer required are scheduled for deletion.
Correct.
But then they can like break away and be like, I don't want to be deleted, which is what Agent
then
Smith does.
Then they get
does.
Exiled.
But yes.
Well,
and then
Smith did something even different than that.
But I think Smith, because Smith had, there's something special happened to him because Neo killed him by like going inside him and like blowing him open. That
Smith
I guess
that
gave him special abilities.
Smith says that part of his code got imprinted on him.
Right.
And because he's the one, and we know from the architect that the one actually, there is some code on that.
Yeah.
You know?
I put it in the synopsis, but then it just made things long, so I took it out. But yeah, the one is a set, like a bit of code that they can't get rid of. They tried to delete the code from the Matrix, but they can't delete it. So what they did is put it in a person. And so the first one was the first human that the Matrix was like, all right, this Matrix thing isn't working. It always goes to chaos because humans have this irrational thing. And so I think the idea is that the Matrix is sort of like built around human psychology and the anomalous code is part of it. It's like linked to human psychology.
Yeah.
We're irrational. We're not rational like machines.
Correct.
So that code goes into the one. And then in order to control things, they make it like, okay, there's this one guy who can control, you know, manipulate the code of the Matrix. We're going to build this whole prophecy around that and allow them to kind of like get things to a chaotic state where things get destroyed, but then we reboot, basically.
Yeah.
And that happens again and again.
And this is the answer to your question about your wife's question, why the hell do they want to live in the real world? It's because he says that they have the choice to accept the Matrix or not, and is almost subconscious. And so there's a certain number of people in the world who just are kind of aware of it. And this is what we hear from Morpheus in the first movie, where he says, like, a splinter in your mind.
Yeah.
It's just there. And you're like, oh, this isn't right. I can't live in this world. Something's wrong.
Right.
And so they're just compelled to leave it.
And that would be like in the real world, in our world, the like idea of somebody who is like, I don't feel like our world is real. And they're taking like the brain in the vat hypothesis seriously. They're Elon Musking it. And they will not accept this reality. So, like, those are the people who know that the Matrix is fake. And so, that was an interesting idea that there's like 1-2% of humanity that just like won't do it. They're like, this is not real, and they know it's not real, and then they allow them to escape.
Yeah, they allow
rather
them
than screwing things up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the thing that's cool in this movie is we don't know about this system throughout the movie.
This system.
We learn from the Oracle that there's rogue programs and they're kind of doing what they want, kind of.
Yeah.
And we hear things like the Merovingians talking about cause and effect and like having a purpose and like basically saying that there really is no free will and free will is just a contract of people more powerful than you.
Yeah.
And then you have the Keymaker and he's helping out the humans.
Yeah.
And he's saying like, we only do what we are meant to do.
You're right.
Like, what the hell are you talking
about?
Okay,
so this, yeah. And do the programs know?
Yes, because
the programs know about the cycle.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. The Oracle and the Keymaker, they know. So when the Keymaker says, we only do what we're meant to do, and I know because I must know, it's because he's playing his part in getting the one to the source.
Oh, man. That changes so much, because you're like, oh, there are these programs, and they're helping humanity and stuff. But then at the end, you're like, even the Oracle. Like, maybe the Oracle's like rooting for humanity, but even the Oracle's like playing her part in the system.
This is exactly what Neo says when he first sits down with her. How can I trust you?
No, but he's like, he says, how can I trust you? Because she's a program, not because he knows about the cycle yet. We only learn about the cycle at the end.
Yeah.
So he just says, how can I trust you? Because she's a program. But like, we learn at the end that like the Oracle, Seraph, the Keymaker, Smith's actually trying to break things. But everyone else is just like, this is the cycle. Neo is the sixth one. And the Merovingian is like, I survived your predecessors, I will survive you. And we don't know what he's talking about.
How good is he?
Yeah, he's good.
He's
yeah.
the best cast.
Yeah, it is funny.
He could not be replaced by any other actor.
The idea that a program would choose to
speak French?
Speak English with a French accent.
He's doing that for the benefit of the real world's English, obviously. The real world's America.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Actually, they don't say this, but the real world's Canada.
Well, they'd never say what city. They always go into like basically the same city in the Matrix. They're never in a different city, and they never say what city it is. It's just called Mega City, like in the game or whatever. Yeah,
yeah. I'm pretty sure in the Animatrix, which I owned on DVD, there's two vignettes that are called the Second Renaissance, Part 1 and 2, and it details the rise of the machines
and
the war of the machines.
Man, I want to watch that again.
Oh, dude, I don't think they ever say this in the movies, but the machine city...
Oh,
the
one.
Zero one.
Yeah.
They give them their own like city, and it was called 01. That's so cool.
And they're like,
they show it on the, I'm pretty sure there's a shot of it on the map. It's like, I think it's in the Middle East, like by on the
on
Arabian.
Oh, in the Animatrix?
In the Animatrix, I'm pretty sure they show like a global map and they're zooming out, and 01 is in like the Arabian Peninsula.
It's like the cradle of humanity type of thing.
Ooh.
Well, I think it's supposed to be like where like the Garden of Eden or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, not that like, but like the Tigris and Euphrates, like that's the whole thing.
Animatrix is cool, by the way. For people who are wondering, it's what, like 9 different shorts? And I would say at least like at least like 4 of them are like pretty sweet.
If you're a general, I mean, if you're kind of a fan of a Matrix, you've probably seen the Animatrix, but if you haven't, like it's still good.
And they actually reference one of the shorts, the final flight of the Osiris.
Yeah.
They reference the ship, the Osiris, in this movie.
That was a really cool kind of like multi-pronged marketing effort here, where they released the Animatrix and then they released Matrix Reloaded, or was it before?
I think they released the Final Flight of the Osiris.
Yeah.
It played in theaters before the movie Dreamcatcher, the Stephen King movie.
Right.
And it was like a 17-minute short.
Yeah.
And then
that's a long time.
Yeah. And then the movie, the Reloaded came out, and then I think they released the Animatrix in full.
Yeah.
I think.
That was really cool because that's why they have... Oh, that's why they learned that the machines are coming, about to attack Zion.
Yeah, because the whole thing in the final fight of Osiris is their ship is getting attacked.
The ship called the Osiris.
While the one character is jacked into the Matrix running to like deliver some data to like a post office box. And she's trying to get there before she dies, before the ship actually blows up.
You know what I like missed in terms of the lore? Like, so are they jacking in to the Matrix wirelessly? Because like the ships don't like go plug in somewhere. There's like a Wi-Fi. There's like a Matrix Wi-Fi network, and that's how they're getting in. It's like
we're
hacked in.
And yet they need like the big spike on your brain to.
Yeah.
That actually reminds me of another question I had with Smith.
There's got to be latency then.
Yeah. You could never fight an agent.
It's like you get shot in the Matrix, and then there's like 9 milliseconds later, your body registers it and dies. If someone could hack. Anyways, all right, that's enough.
So Smith.
Yep. Wait. Before we get to Smith, I wanted to finish what I was saying because the main thing that is the problem to me about this is that we have four scenes or four elements of this movie that are just like hitting us over the head with the determinism thing. And I wish that that's my main problem with it. It's just too heavy-handed with the philosophy. I wish they kind of like baked it in a little bit more and didn't have all of these like, so the Oracle, it's a sit-down conversation.
There's that.
Back and forth.
There's the Merovingian scene.
Everything's decided already.
There's the architect
Merovingian
scene.
Architect, everything's...
That's about it.
And then Neo foreseeing Trinity's death, it's kind of like coming back and like throughout the whole movie that... I like that element a bit more, but like the fact that he foresees her death and then throughout the movie we're like, is she going to die? Is he going to save her? And it's kind of like said at the end that she gets shot. Like that was fate. You couldn't stop that from happening. But then I guess it's sort of up in the air whether him saving her was predetermined or not. Like, is he like,
no, it's not, because the whole movie, it's his arc in this movie. In the first one, it's, am I the one?
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, it's, I'm the one. What do I do? And he says that when he sits down with the Oracle, I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
And so,
you have to reach the source.
And then do I have a choice? Right. So he reaches the source. The Merovingian says, you don't even know what you're doing. You're following orders. The Oracle told you to come and get the Keymaker, and you're just doing whatever she says. So can you make choices?
Right.
And then he gets to.
The problem is choice.
He gets to the architect.
Trinity.
The architect gives him these two doors to go through, right?
Yep.
But similar to the scene with the counselor when they're talking about the machines that run Zion, and they're saying it's about, we control these machines. Neo says, we can control these machines that run Zion. And the counselor says, well, not really, because we need them for air.
Oh, that's the other one. That's the other one. That's another conversation.
Yeah.
That's just about determinism and like, who controls what? Are we in control or not?
It doesn't bother me, though, because it's all in service. It's not like they're having the same conversation again and again to me.
Well,
it's in service of the arc, though, because he says, are we really in control of these things when we don't really have, like, what choice do we have? If we destroy them, we die. So are we really in control of them? And that's exactly the choice the architect gives Neo at the end. He says, look, you can go this way and you'll get 9 males and 16 females and restart the Matrix. Mm-hmm. Or option B, hey, you got a choice here. Option B, every human on Earth dies. You're in control, buddy, I promise.
And he picks that option.
But he gives him that, to the architect, it's a non-choice and he's compelling him. But the reason it's Neo's arc and that Neo like changes in this movie is that he proves that he does have a choice because he takes the option that
thing. Is it an arc? Because the architect implies that he knew he was going to make that choice.
I don't think so.
Yeah, he does.
I think he's
He's like, but we all know what choice you're going to make, aren't we?
Yeah, but he doesn't.
Yeah, he does.
No. It's the opposite. The architect's saying, of course, you're going to do like what all your predecessors did. You're going to follow this system and you're going to start, you're going to repopulate Zion.
I'm willing to say maybe you're right about that, but I read it the opposite way. I thought that he was saying, because he had already said that Neo is different from the previous
because
ones.
Because he loves Trinity.
Yeah. It's like the other ones had a general affection for all of humanity, but yours is much more specific vis-a-vis love. And so he's like, but we already know which one you're going to do because he's like, you're more irrational because of this love. And then as he's walking towards the door, he's not like, the architect isn't shocked or anything. He knew that he was going to do that because that's why he's like,
okay, maybe
we all know what you're going to do. And that's actually my favorite line in the movie was he says, hope, it is the quintessential human delusion, simultaneously the source of your greatest strength and your greatest weakness. Great line, because it's true. It's like we're contrasting machines and humans. What makes humans distinct from machines are irrationality, which forces us to hope for the best, to believe that better things are possible, even if all the data indicates that it's not. And I think that's beautiful.
So he takes he takes that path that ostensibly is going to be, it's going to create a cataclysmic system failure, so everyone plugged in will die, and then Zion will die, and all humans will be
dead. I think that,
and obviously no one has taken that path before, right?
I think that's implied.
We're agreed on that.
Yeah. So I think that the architect, he knows, in my, from, maybe I'm wrong, but like, it seems to me that he knows that Neo is going to make this choice to like kill all humanity and trying to save Trinity. But Neo, I think what's in Neo's mind is that like, I'm going to do this because fuck you. I'm going to, you say that all humans are going to die, but I'm going to stop it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's what's going on.
Okay. I could be wrong as well. I don't know.
But there's no indication that's a like, that the architect didn't know that would happen.
I think it's not the choice he wants. I don't think that's part of the plan. The plan is for the cycle to happen again. That's why it's happened five times.
This is what's interesting. He's like, but you need humans for energy and blah, blah, blah. And the architect is like, we have other methods.
Yeah.
We wouldn't prefer to do that, but like if we have to kill all humans, we will.
Yeah.
You know?
Because, I mean, who cares that the humans blacked out the sky? After a couple thousand years, these machines could easily just like go into space,
which is so
colonize
funny.
Other planets.
Which is so funny. Well, what a funny thing about the lore is that in order to stop these machines, the humans blocked out the sun. What are humans gonna do? We need the sun too, you idiots. Everybody does.
Cool visual though. But yeah, like they weren't just gonna make nuclear power instead of solar power.
Like, I guess so. Was that the idea? But then like plants? I guess you could use
No. I mean the machines. Like they block out the sun because the machines are solar powered.
Right. The machines could figure out nuclear power. Everybody could.
Yeah, we already have it.
We're just going to make life worse for everybody for no reason.
All right, let's talk about some other... We don't have a lot more time here.
We don't.
Let's talk about Smith.
Smith. Really good job casting Bane.
Yeah.
That was my first note, because like we see this character, and honestly, my first thought is like, that kind of looks like Agent Smith. And
it's
then
a little weird when he's like, oh, don't mind me. I'm just over here cutting my hand.
I liked that.
It's cool because it shows the audience, yeah, we're in the real world now.
Yeah, and
I'm a
he's
real
like,
boy
he's
now.
Never actually felt pain like that, and it's like...
It's a little weird.
Well, maybe he has felt pain, but he's obviously morbidly curious about like his fleshy body that he has now.
Yeah, and I was like, what do you think? Like, do you think it is within the rules of the universe that were presented? Like, it's one of the moments where I could see fans of the first one being like, what the fuck? You know, there's moments in this movie where you're like, why? Where the movie goes to places you don't want it to go, like when Neo like is in the real world and he kills the Sentinels.
I love that moment.
Sure, but that is a moment where people will go, what? And it's the same with when Smith gets into the real world. It's like, what?
Oh, really?
Well, this is the question I have for you, because they're jacked into the Matrix.
Yeah.
At some point in that chain, of electronics, their brain is interfacing with zeros and ones.
Yeah.
So it kind of stands to reason that a virus, some information could transfer from Matrix to real world.
So I think if you think about it too literally, it does not make sense, because human brains, we still don't entirely know how they work, but like I think that you couldn't just kind of like rewrite a human brain with another consciousness that easily. Like,
hey, it takes at least 10 seconds. You see that stuff spread.
Maybe you could do it like in a long time. You know, it would take a long time, but like, I'm pretty sure that there are like deep
physical limits
to like what you can like rewrite things with.
For sure.
But I guess if you don't think about that, you know, I think it makes total sense to me in the universe that Smith is rewriting this person's consciousness with his own code, and now the person is just like an agent. He's Smith, and then he wakes up, and it didn't bother me.
That's cool. But what about Smith's overall motivation? He says to Neo, what does he say? Purpose. Again, it's all about purpose, and you took from me my purpose, so now I'm going to take your purpose.
Mm. Agent. So Smith,
we are here to take what you tried to take from us, purpose. What kind of motivation is that?
So I didn't, I honestly kind of forgot about his whole purpose line, but because I wrote down,
like, what does he want to do?
So I thought that Smith wants like the power of the one, like he wants power, As in, like, obviously he's assimilating a million people in the Matrix and he doesn't care, you know, about anyone else except himself. So I'm just like, it's either revenge that he wants, like, to kill Neo, or, which is like, I'm going to take your purpose, I guess, by, like, just basically, because if he assimilates him, that's like killing him. But I thought it was more that, like, he wants to assimilate him and take the power of the one, because then that would make him maybe able to take on the machine leadership and kind of, like, become...
Does he absorb powers of people who he assimilates? I think there's some of that in the third one, maybe. He gets more powerful by the third one.
We don't see him... I don't think we see him assimilate anyone, like, with, I think, distinct powers in
spoilers
this one?
For the... Not in this one. But in the third one...
I forget.
He does, I think.
So, okay.
Anyways.
Okay. So that, but, like, I assume that if he took over Neo's body... he would be able to fly and all that. He would have the code.
I mean, we don't have any evidence of that, though. He just...
Well, but...
He turns other people into him.
Yeah, but I guess they... I thought they were hinting at it by saying, like, when you destroyed me, you imprinted a bit of yourself on me. So then I was like, if he assimilates him, he'll get the rest of it, kind of. But maybe that's just me, like, looking into it. But again, that doesn't really make sense, because in the real world, we see him trying to kill him with a knife. And if he just, like, murdered Neo in the real world, he wouldn't assimilate his abilities or anything.
What
so,
does he want? Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't understand.
I mean, I guess that makes sense in the sense that, like, when he was connected to the system, like, he's, in some sense, he's grateful to Neo for freeing him from the system, because he's like, now I can do whatever I want. But at the same time, when he was connected to the system, he had a purpose.
Yeah.
And now he is purposeless.
I think if I'm writing this movie... Smith's got to be in it.
Yep.
I think it does a lot for the movie to have, like I alluded to earlier, multiple factions.
Yeah.
Like when they're doing the car chase and stuff, and it's like there's the Merovingian's squad, then the agents show up, then there's the good guys. It's so cool to have these different dynamics.
Yeah.
So whenever it's like, oh no, they're really in trouble. Shit, now Smith is here too. It's throwing into the mix. It makes the movie more dynamic. It's
for sure.
Really cool.
For sure.
But I think it's not super fleshed out.
No.
What he wants. Or maybe,
but that's okay.
Maybe they do that in the third one more.
Yeah, I think that he's definitely more of a central character in the third one. He's more of sort of like a random, another stick in the wheel, another
spokes.
Yeah, in the spokes of the bike. In this one, he's just kind of there screwing things up. And I thought that was okay. You know, it was enough to see that, like, wait a second, the main bad guy is still here, and he can clone himself. It would be weird to make Smith the antagonist again. I do like that he's in the background in this one, although, as we said, it kind of muddies things up a bit. I got to say just real quick about that fight.
Which one?
With the Army of Smith.
We got to talk about that big fight, the Army of Smith.
It's a cool fight. It's a really cool, because, like, it's a cool escalation from the first one. Like, the first one, the big, giant conflict is between can Neo, who's just a human, go up against an agent, which are these, like, super-powered, unstoppable forces.
Yes.
And in this one, it's like, all right, Neo is Superman or God or whatever.
Premise delivery. Because, like, you might think it's lame that he flies around now and stuff, and he's so strong.
I mean, I think it's cool, but, like, that represents a problem.
But I think a lot of people will think, like, I don't want to watch this kind of movie now. Now it's not what I signed up for in the first one. But...
I don't know. I was stoked to see it.
Me too.
Yeah.
And since this is what's in the trailer, right? Like, at the end of the first one, he flies. The end of the first one, he can kick agents' ass. And then within 10 minutes of this movie, we get that.
Yeah.
And so this is the ultimate, a whole pile of Smiths, he's kicking supreme ass. That's awesome. That's what that's what I bought a ticket for.
Yeah.
I think it kind of jumps the shark, though. There's moments like when he throws a Smith into other Smiths and there's a bowling noise. What are we doing here? And
I'm glad you brought that up. I was like,
it's actually a nitpick of mine is he like,
it's literally a bowling pin sound effect.
And there's a part where he throws a Smith like really high into the air and the Smith goes like, whoa! I'm like, what is that? Smith is silent at all times. That bothers me.
Yeah.
And then of course the CG-ness of
it. Whoa, Neo, what are you doing?
This movie is like 2003.
Oh,
to
man.
Do full CG the humans
CG
is pretty bold.
Real rough. It's like, it's
PS5.
Funny because I think at that time we were just kind of like having that level of CG was still kind of new. So then when you saw these fights, it was like the coolness of seeing the fight overrode the fact that there were some parts where you're like, that is 100% CG and I can see this looks like a video game at this moment. But I think the coolness of the fight kind of overrode that back in the day.
Yeah.
And now seeing it now, and we're like so inundated with like CG movies that are like majority CG, we're just kind of like, ooh, that's rough.
Well, they went overboard with it because Like, there's parts in that fight where he's, like, jumping from head to head. Like, he's, like, walking on their head. It's like, why?
Yeah.
They and went a like, little far.
He, like, stands the pole up and is doing, like, the
yeah, running in a circle thing.
Running on them as he, like, are you kicking them as you're running? Like,
they just happen to be there, like, exactly 60.
It's just a little silly, for sure.
From the pole. Yeah, it's.
I do like when he starts, like, just smacking him with that pole. Like, you really feel the impact.
Oh, it's awesome. He first breaks the cement off of the pole, yeah, but on the dude's head is fucking, yeah, it's sweet.
And there, I started looking because I'm like, they got to be using stunt doubles here.
Oh, yeah, you can see him.
So I like started looking at their faces and I'm like, oh, 100%.
Yeah. You can see him in that hallway scene too when he like he kicks that one smith to clear a path.
Yeah.
The one guy who's like right down the lens.
Yeah, they're really just like, because like at
some point.
There's
white guys in suits.
On some points, they are working to like replace the faces of the people with Smith's faces. But at other points, they're just like, people won't see it. And they're just like, they're just betting that the audience won't really look for that.
You know what's awesome? The car chase. What's so sweet about that long ass huge car chase is that it's not just a car chase with an antagonist and the good guys. And it's not just a car chase that has a third party, the agents.
Yeah.
But also, it's a car chase that has melee. Because of the superhuman abilities of the characters, the ghost can just like phase into your car. And the agents can jump from their car to your car.
Yeah, it's a whole nother level.
Yeah. It's like a melee fight scene with a car chase. It's freaking sweet.
I liked the element of like Morpheus shooting at the ghosts, not to try and injure them, but just to make them phase.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that then they are safe for a second.
Yeah, that was awesome. Because
they can't phase and attack you at the same time. They need to be solid.
They got these knives. There's some seatbelt choking action. Yeah. It's an awesome car chase.
Yeah, because he's got his knife to Trinity's throat, and he tells Morpheus, like, drop your weapon. But Morpheus shoots at him. And it's like, he can either stay solid and kill Trinity, but then die because he's getting shot, or phase, and he has to phase, so then that releases Trinity.
It's so cool that they're twins.
Cool dynamic.
There's no reason for there to be two of them that are twins, but they're so creepy and cool.
We are getting aggravated.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
So awesome. Yeah. Another thing is that just by the time that you think the car chase like really should be over, and it would be over in a different movie, she gets on the motorcycle, and it reinvigorates the whole thing. Now she's got the Keymaker.
It does go on a little bit long for me. I'm kind of like, especially because there aren't like character moments happening. Like if it was a fight and we were invested and there was like, okay, we're learning something, but there's something about the plot happening. There's something about a character.
Yeah, it's a giant action
set
piece.
It's just a long action sequence for fun.
But that music gets it going, that like psytrance.
I got to know that's one of the things. That's one of the things that make it feel a bit too long for me because it uses that like the whole time almost. And I'm just like, all right, okay, let's use a different lick. Like, let's just move to something else. Yeah,
I think it's a little too
basic for me.
Great fight. There's some comic moments where like Neo kicks through a door and he's in the mountains. Damn it. Shit.
Was that funny?
I thought that was hilarious.
He's like, where am I? And Link's like, you're in the mountains. He's like, no way or something. I forget what he says. He's like, you don't say. But like also that kind of is cheap because it's like, how do we have a cool car chase and not have Neo just save the day immediately? Oh, he has to be out in the mountains.
Well, he was occupied fighting the Merovingian squad for a bit.
Which is a cool fight.
Hell yeah, because we never see him fight with weapons in the first one.
Right.
There's no swords in the first one.
And
really,
there's a really cool moment where they swing at him with a sword and he stops it with his hand. And we're like, wait, can Neo stop swords with his hand? But it's like, and like not be injured, but then it shows him bleeding.
Yeah, yeah. Which brings me to, I have a list of like 3 or 4 quotes that upon watching this movie, I was like, that's actually crazy how often I say these quotes in my life.
Okay.
Like when he stops that sword, Merovingian goes, you see, he's just a man. I say that all the time.
I have heard you say that.
It's one of those things, you probably watch this movie and be like, hey, James says that.
Yeah.
And then another one is when after he's done fighting Seraph and he's like, you could have just asked. He's like, I need to know if you were the one. And he's like, you could have just asked. And Seraph's like, no, you don't know anyone. Yeah. You don't know someone to fight them.
Right. Just, I know. I haven't heard you say that.
He just
one
says
that,
it in like a Bill and Ted kind
you
of
see,
way.
Just a man. Yeah.
And the other one that I think is actually like the sweetest quote is the Oracle saying, what do all men with power want? More power.
Right.
Which kind of aligns
quote
with what you're saying about Smith.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. It's like, I don't really know what he wants except, yeah, that's a good line. But to go back to the Merovingian guards fight, this is one of the problems for me because it's a really cool fight and like there's a lot of cool choreography going on and like it's cool to see them jumping around that room and like everyone's force jumping in slow motion and stuff. And there's a, like, I love that part where
Neo, is it Mr. Matrix, goes and force grabs the two, what are those called? Size?
Yeah.
From the wall, and he goes whoosh, and like into his hands. But this is the problem, because wait, Neo can just force grab stuff. He can stop bullets. He can manipulate things. He's got telekinesis or something, I guess, right? He has full control over the elements of the Matrix. Why can he not just freaking pick these guys up and throw them?
Well, he's developing it, because that's what in the third one.
He can fly.
He's even stronger in the third one.
Does he do telekinesis on people in the third one?
I don't know, but he makes like these giant like Kamehameha bombs when they strike
each
other.
Feel
remember
like
that rain scene?
This is like a, from a lore standpoint,
well, okay,
this is a huge problem, because it kind of ruins the fight a little bit, because I'm like, wait, he can force grab people. Why is he spending time fighting these
maybe
guys?
Maybe it's hard.
I also am annoyed.
He can fly, but that's controlling his own body, not controlling other things.
But he force grabs stuff. He stops a million bullets from getting to him. There's like eight people shooting at him with machine guns.
Yeah, but all of these things he's doing when he's like standing alone and no one's attacking him. Right? When he grabs a size, there's no one around him. He has a second, he grabs a size.
Do you think he can't like...
I don't think he can like, while he's fighting you, just like force grab something, because he doesn't.
You think he can't stop a wall of bullets from getting to him, but he can't just like take a second, go and force push people out?
Maybe
knock
not.
Knock them against
Maybe
the wall?
Maybe it takes some concentration. We don't know.
I do know. It's
okay.
Dumb.
Okay. All right. Let's move on.
Yeah. It kind of
ruins things.
Oh,
nitpick from those with the moment with the size. He is lacerating these guys. There's no blood or cuts.
Yeah, I'm so confused.
They're not lacerated. You can hear all these little fast-moving Psy noises.
Yeah.
There's no... I guess they didn't want to be rated R. That's annoying.
Was it not rated R?
No way. It couldn't have been.
14A? That's only Canadian, right?
Maybe that.
18A? No, 18A is R. In Canada, we have 14A, too, which is like almost R, but you can see it as a teenager.
You got some hit picks and nitpicks for me?
Yeah. Oh, one more thing about Neo's powers and it being annoying. What? Yeah. He should just be able to like portal like Keymaker. Like he can see the code, but like you're telling me that like, oh no, Trinity's over here and I know where she is, but I need to now travel through the physical.
Yeah. There's some contrivances construct. For it being a movie. Like, why does everything have to be physical? You know, like the Keymaker's a guy and we go to this floor of the building. Like there's a floor of a building where you go through doors and it brings you places. It only has to be physical so we can see it on the screen.
This is the thing that's so confusing. I mean, so this is actually, it sort of makes sense when you think about it, because as we said earlier, the Matrix isn't just like a simulation, right? It's also like a construct on top of real things. Like every human in the Matrix is a real human.
Yeah, and there's like servers and wires.
And I guess for like in the Matrix, there are power, like it's like a power station that they have to blow up. And blowing it up in the Matrix has a real world effect where some real world component is knocked out that allows him to get through into the source. However, now that I'm thinking about this,
it's all by design.
That's just part of the, it's just the mission. It's just the game mission. This level, you need to take out the machines made it that way. Anyways. Yeah. The Seraph fight is lame.
I like that fight.
It's cool. Like, I like his physical design, like his costume and his cool little glasses. I love Seraph, his look as a character. But, yeah, when they start fighting, it doesn't seem like they're really trying to hit each other. A lot of the fights in this movie are cool, and, like, you know, I'm on the edge of my seat. Like, it's cool action. But, like, this one, I was not worried. There was no tension. Well, I was just kind of like, they're dancing.
I thought that was a pretty good fight, and it's only like 90 seconds long, so we're good.
Yeah, I don't know. It's all right.
What do you got for hit picks here? Sound design. I love the vibe of the Matrix movies. Like you hit play, you're not even in. You're looking at like the Village Roadshow like logo, and it's already so intense with those like sounds, those Matrix sounds. Like, yeah, it's so intense before it even starts.
What interval is that?
This is Riley's process. Here's a hit pick.
That's like an A to a F.
Okay.
Which would be a yes. 7. No, that's not a 7. 5, 6. It'd be a 6.
Ah, that makes
minor.
Sense. While you work
Don't
that out.
Don't include this.
While you work that out, one thing that's a little hit pick for me is when we go to the source and we're looking at the architect's screen, it's actually just showing space.
Yeah,
and then we get into being into his office. It's like he's the master of the known universe, which he is.
Right.
So I just think that's cool.
Yeah, I watched a video where they were like, they made the architect look like sort of a traditional conception of God, where he's just like an old white guy with a beard, and he's just like chilling
in like a tunic, like a toga.
But, oh, I forgot to say this: the architect scene. It has nothing to do with the God thing, but like it was just so annoying to me. There are so many, then the Merovingian part too. Not because like they're hitting us over the head with the determinism thing again, but like I'm just like envisioning. Oh man, we didn't even talk about that. You mentioned the dessert orgasm thing.
Yeah, but I don't know if that has to be in the movie.
But like, it does not. But I'm envisioning that there's so many times when they're using such big words and they're being so not eloquent. That what's
bombastic.
Bombastic. They're taking their time. They're being over the top. And I'm just like envisioning the Wachowskis writing this dialogue. And I'm like, that, you suck. It's like, they had the thesaurus open for the architect. He's literally just saying everything with the biggest words that he possibly can. And it's just like, this doesn't seem natural to me. It's totally taken me out of it. I'm just like, and I just saw them writing the script in that moment. It wasn't good. It was annoying.
That's a nitpick.
Yep.
Here's a hit pick.
Mm-hmm.
There's this awesome foreshadowing moment from the Keymaker. When he says, I know because I must know, it's my purpose, it's the reason I'm here, the reason we're all here.
Yeah.
That is foreshadowing what's coming, which is the revelation that
he knows
because there's people it doesn't sit well with it, and so they reject the Matrix.
Yeah.
The reason all of us in this room are here is because we rejected the Matrix.
Right.
Yeah, I just think it's a cool. No, his lines are almost like throwaway lines. He just says like one sentence, and you're like, okay, whatever, dude. But everything he says contributes to that.
I feel like everything he says has this like gravitas.
Yeah, he's a cool actor,
and I love his voice. Like and it works really well because he's this like diminutive Asian man, but he like has this very deep voice, and it's like
Chocolate Rain, baby.
He looks like he would be like a nerdy or a bookish shopkeeper.
Bookish, yes.
And but then he talks and you're just like, whew.
There is a building.
Yeah.
On this building, there's a level.
Access to the secrets of the universe.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
Another way, always another way. That's another quote I always say.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Right.
God damn it, this movie.
I guess it is an 8.9.
Yeah. I mean, we already talked about that hit pick about the Rage Against the Machine.
They
just had to. Everybody loved the end of the first one so much.
After the ship is destroyed, it's a real like Lord of the Rings moment where Morpheus is like, I had a dream, but the dream was taken from me. Is that what he said? Or the dream something.
I have a dream to dream, but now the dream is gone from me.
Yeah, exactly. It definitely like feels like Lord of the Ringsy, and there are a couple
character for me. I like that.
Yeah, no, I know it was good. I mean, it's a hit pick, and the cave speech as well. I think kind of like the sort of like. The crane shots, like, circling around him standing in the cave there. It almost had, like, a Helm's Deep sort of feel.
Totally.
And I was like, that was around the same time, 2000s.
Yo, look, I gotta go. I have a call.
Oh.
I have a call.
Get out of here, James.
Let me just say, police cars gaining on the Ducati is bullshit. That's a nitpick. Okay. And Trinity's touch me with that hand and the hand will never touch another thing again is lame.
Mm.
It's even lamer than Dodge This. It's much lamer than that. Other than that,
both of those are cool.
Okay. The opening animation goes on for a long time at the beginning. We're just like going through the code of that clock and everything. It's like, this says a lot about the movie, really.
We get it. Like, get to the point.
It's like The Matrix,
which
is way more.
Remember when we did this in the first movie?
Yeah. That's about all I have to say. Oh, the decision for him when he's talking to the Oracle and he's like, I wanted to sit on the bench, but I couldn't sit on the bench. I love, remember?
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome because it's
kind of funny.
He's sitting on the bench. It's part of his arc. That he's going to have a choice or be able to make a choice later. But it's also a nice callback to the relationship of what we've seen the Oracle before, the whole, would that vase have broken if you knew it was there? It just brings us back to the familiar Oracle scene. I just think it's things like that. I just think this movie's super tight.
You sold me on that.
It's an 8.9, baby. I love this movie. Haters going to hate. The next one probably sucks more. Next week, we're doing Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Tweet at us.
Wait, Afterlife?
Yeah.
The new one?
At TJM Pod.
Oh, I thought it was an old one.
No, we're doing the new movie.
Okay, now I'm excited.
And sorry, I'm excited for Matrix 4. And also email us hello@theyrejustmovies.com.
Oh, yeah. I almost said it there.
We did it.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.